First of all, we pray about it, which is a good start. And then, we just pray what, ask God to tell us what he wants to speak to the church family through us that particular Sunday. It's usually Renu then comes up with something and says, this is what she believes God is saying that he wants us to speak of. So we talk about it, pray some more, continue to pray. Eventually, it all takes shape. And I know it's usually me, or always me, who stands here and does the actual sermon. A lot of times, Renee will do the other bits. She's working today, as I mentioned earlier. I know it's me, but it is a joint effort. Renee contributes to it all. So we call ourselves Team Galligan. However, a couple of months ago, I was actually doing a Bible study on the book of Ruth. And I've heard the book of Ruth. I've been coming to this church since 1977, I think it is. So obviously I've heard this preached many times. And this time I'm doing a Bible study. And a few months ago, David actually used the YouVersion app from his Kindle or his phone. So it's got the Bible on, and it's got all these Bible study apps. And it was that one that I was using with the Book of Ruth. And I just think it is a good way to start the day. But at times, I would also say, especially if you're new to the Bible or you want a new Bible study, then go for it. So it's called YouVersion. However, I would also say that sometimes some of the Bible study apps can be the programs can be a bit basic, shall we say. So it might be a good start, but you need to keep on developing and find new Bible study books, apps, whatever, as you deepen your faith. I feel a 5-minute Bible study first thing in the morning, for me, is not enough. But when I was studying this on the YouVersion, studying Ruth, I thought that there is so much in this book. It's only 4 chapters long, and I prayed that God would give me the opportunity to then pass on what I was learning. Only a couple of hours later, David texts me asking if I was able to preach in August. A couple of weeks ago, Bonnie preached about certain situations and were they just a coincidence? We all knew the ones that Bonnie was elaborating on were not. And they were brought about by God. And I honestly feel, me and Renee call these divine coincidences. I've heard that mentioned in the past as well, a divine coincidence. It's been God-given. And so I believe that this is one of them. I'd like to give you some background about the Book of Ruth. It's all relevant to the story. And the book is actually sandwiched between the Book of Judges and the first Book of Samuel. It's technically a bridge between 2 major parts in Israel's history. So from Genesis to Judges is detailing Abraham's descendants and how they became a nation promised by God. And then the period from 1 Samuel takes us into 2 Samuel and the 2 books of Kings. So it's building up the story of how the kings came about and David being one of the most prominent of the kings. Before we start on Ruth, though, I want to go back to the very last line in Judges. I'm reading from the NIV at the moment, and it says, in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. We commonly use the NIV version, but the King James version, which, I'll be honest, I rarely read. Sometimes I can't understand it. But it says, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And there's a more modern version nowadays, and it's great with these YouVersion apps because you can flick between the different Bible translations if you wish. And the one that I do like reading at times is The Message. And this puts it more bluntly. People did whatever they felt like doing. So moving on to Ruth, the book opens by saying this was the period of Israel's history, was in the days when the judges led Israel. So every man was doing as he wanted. But there was a famine in the land. A man called Elimelech from Bethlehem left home, took his wife Naomi, the two sons, to live in the country of Moab. Bit of an embarrassment this, because Bethlehem actually means house of bread. So, really suggesting prosperity, abundant food, fertility. No coincidence that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, and one of his many names is the Bread of Life. Not so in the time of Elimelech, unfortunately. It's interesting to note that they went to Moab. As in the book of Numbers and Deuteronomy, earlier on in the Bible, God castigates the Moabites for being idolatrous and sexually immoral. The Moabites were actually descended from Lot, who was Abraham's nephew. And in Genesis, we're told that Lot became drunk, and he had two daughters, and they seduced him. Both conceived and bore children. And Lot's oldest daughter named her son Moab. So that's where we get the Moabites from. Also, when the Israelites came out of Egypt, the Moabites were inhospitable to them. They refused to help them. So they were cursed. And the law didn't allow any descendants of Moab to join Israel down to the 10th generation. And also because of the proximity of Moab to Israel's border, there was constant animosity between two nations. Is that not familiar still? Sadly. Moab was situated in what is now southern Jordan. About 4.5 hours if you can drive there. But in those days, it would have taken them days, probably weeks, to walk it. So by the time they got there, bearing in mind there's a famine in Bethlehem, they must have been starving. However, it must be worth it, as the Bible tells us that although Elimelech died, Naomi and the sons settled there. And the sons took a wife each, one of whom was Ruth. The sons lived for 10 years, but sadly both of them died without issue. So Naomi did not have any grandsons to carry on the family name. Very important in those days. Then she heard that the famine back home was over. So she decided not to return. Let's start again. She decided to return, but not before telling her daughters-in-law to stay in Moab and find new husbands. This is all chapter 1, basically. So I'm coming to the chapter 2. However, Ruth, one of the daughter-in-laws, refuses. She won't stay in Moab. And she says she will go where you go, I go. Where you live, I'll live. Your people will be my people. Your God is my God. This is from someone whose culture was paganism and hatred for the Israelites. And the Israelites hated them. Anyway, off to Bethlehem they go. And the people there were querying, is this Naomi? But she said, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. As most of us know, in those days, names were very important. We chose the names Emma and Laura for our daughters because we like them. But Mara means bitter. So Naomi now wished to be known as that, but also blamed God for her situation. We don't know the cause of Naomi's husband and son's deaths, but sadly, Naomi decided it was God's fault. How many times have we blamed God for something that's happened or not happened to help us out of our situation? How many times have we heard people say, if there is a God, why does he allow all this suffering in the world? Something tells me they're after an argument. Whatever we say is not going to make one jot of difference. I remember sitting next to a bloke many years ago who was in that similar situation to me, and he was just calmly denying it all and what have you. And I just said, look, you can come out with as much intellectual conversation, arguments as you want, but I believe in God and I will not stop believing. So I believe that in those situations we should pray for those people and that one day they will come to Jesus personally and then they may understand that God is not to blame. So, if I can read the second chapter of Ruth. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of the harvesters, whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in any other field. And don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, why have I found such favour in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favour in your eyes, my Lord, she said. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles Leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered and it amounted to an ephah. She carried it back to town and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He is not showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is a close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth, the Moabitess, said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. I told you there's a lot in this, didn't I? And I wish I could preach again for a few weeks so that we could learn more together. So, Ruth suggests going into the field to glean behind the harvesters. And it just happens to be a field owned by Boaz. Ruth doesn't know this at the moment, but Boaz also just happens to be a relative of Naomi's. So Boaz comes onto the scene, spots Ruth working in the field. She's been working there all day except for a short rest. She must have been looking and feeling sweaty and dusty after working in the hot weather. But there was clearly something in Ruth that caught his eye. There were other women there, but Ruth was the one he became interested in. She was dirty, sweaty, but he probably thought, "She's all right." Come on, fellas, be honest. It reminds me of a story many, many years ago. Rini's parents were friendly with an elderly couple. Rini's dad used to play Crown Green Bowls, and they got friendly with this couple because the old chap played bowls. And they went off to a hotel in Blackpool for a weekend, and they went watching the bowling at the Waterloo. I don't know if it still goes, but Rini's mum forgot her shoes, her best shoes. So they got dressed, changed for dinner, got dressed, went down. And she said to this lady, she was a lovely lady, Ivy, she was called. She says, "Don't look at my shoes. I've just got my old shoes on." And Ivy said, "I have not got past your beautiful face yet." That was lovely, wasn't it? I say that to Rini many times. And I mean it, honestly. When she says, "I've not washed my hair today, is it all right?" I say, "I haven't got past your beautiful face." So if you don't remember anything else, you can take that one home with you. But when Boaz asks who she is, they reply, "She's a Moabite woman." Was there a bit of prejudice there? We don't know, because we don't know the intonation, do we? But I like how then Boaz has told Ruth, he's told the men not to harm her and for her to continue working in his field. Remember what I said at the start? This is the time when judges led Israel and every man did what they wanted. Remember a few years ago, I think it was even in an advert on TV, "If it feels good, do it." In other words, just do what you like. It doesn't matter if it offends people or upsets them, as long as you are happy. Boaz was not going to let that happen in his field. I don't think it was a warning to them like, "Don't you dare touch Ruth, or else." Because reading the passage, it actually says he was a man of honour, a man of God. He also knew the Old Testament scriptures, because when we read that Ruth was gleaning in the field, that is actually God's provision for the less fortunate. As in Leviticus, it states, when you reap the harvests of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. So clearly Boaz was aware of this instruction from God. And he was keeping her in his field to make sure she was looked after, fed, and protected. As I keep saying, this was a Moabite woman, and who knows what the other men may have done to her if Boaz had not protected her. But then Boaz goes even further, telling her to help herself to water whenever she needed it, calling her to join them while they ate. In those days, it was a woman's job to do that for the men. When Ruth asked Boaz, why is he doing this for her? He says he's heard of what she's done already. And then he gives her a blessing. He's inviting her to eat with them as well. Then he goes further. He tells the men to deliberately pull out stalks so that she can collect behind them. So when Ruth finished, she had an ephah of barley to carry home. Thankfully, the footnotes to the Bible explain that's about 13 kilograms, or about 2 stones in old money. Just imagine her carrying these big bags back. You see, I'm getting a lot of parallels here between Boaz and Jesus. When Jesus carried out his first miracle, he turned the water into wine. It was the best ever. When Jesus turned the 5 loaves and 2 fish into a feast for over 5,000, it was God's abundant provision for the people. There were 5,000 men, not counting the women and children, the Bible says. And it goes on to say, and there were 12 baskets of leftovers. Now this might be a bit controversial, but I remember hearing somebody say, God gives us just enough. But that's not what the Bible is saying here. I believe our God is a God of abundance. Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 9, says, as it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor. Their righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of the Lord's people, but is also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. And again, the Message translation is, this most generous God who gives seed to the farmer, that becomes bread for you, for your meals, is more extravagant with you. He gives you something you can give away, which grows into fully formed lives, robust in God, wealthy in every way, so that you can be generous in every way, producing with us great praise to God. So see, this is God providing in a financial way as well as a spiritual way. For centuries in this country, we've been told we can't ask for money, we can't pray for money. If we don't, how do we pay our bills? If we just pray for just enough, how do we then give to the needy? The fair share, how do we do that? If I've only got just enough to pay for my shopping. God provides in an abundant way. In the feeding the 5,000, we don't know what happened to the basket of leftovers. But I guarantee they were used to help those who had not been there and the needy. Because the boy had donated his packed lunch, Jesus was able to bless it and help the masses. The boy could have said no. After all, he had the forethought to bring his packed lunch. Everybody else could have done the same, but he didn't. He gladly gave it up. We don't even know his name. It doesn't tell. But he's gone down in history of the Bible for this small act of generosity. Perhaps he'd already seen Jesus working and he had such faith that he knew Jesus would be able to perform a miracle with his small donation. And again, that's why I bless the offering. People here have given generously, and I mentioned the fair share, again, giving generously for the needy. This is helping people far and wide. Bless you. There's so much for us to learn here. Boaz has shown great generosity to Ruth, and we can do the same. I once read about the butterfly effect. Has anybody heard of the butterfly effect? Good. It's amazing, because it says, the idea that a small, seemingly trivial event may ultimately result in something with much larger consequences. The theory is that when a butterfly flaps its wings in one part of the world, that tiny change of air pressure could eventually cause a tornado somewhere else in the world. What we do today, whether positive or negative, can have a greater impact than we realise. Many years ago, again, me and his mum and dad, I talk a lot of Rena's mum and dad in my sermons, and because, yeah, they were a wonderful couple. And I love them even now, even though they died 20-odd years ago. We went away for a long weekend, and on the Sunday, Rena's mum wanted to go to church, so we went to a local church. It was absolutely packed, this church. And as we walked in, there was just three seats left, and we were ushered into these three seats, and then this guy came and gave us the hymn book, and then the service, we enjoyed the service, and after, at the end of it, it was a Church of England, doesn't matter. He invited everybody to come for coffee afterwards. So this same person came to us and he spoke to us and said, you know, welcome. Please come and have coffee with us. Okay, thank you. So we did, and it was a room behind the church. And as we walked along, we was in the queue, and they're pouring out from, you know, the big tea urns like we used to have. We probably still have them because we don't throw anything away in this church, do we? Pouring out the milky coffee. And I can't drink milky coffee. It's vile. It's disgusting. I would be as sick as a dog. And so I have black coffee. And Rainey's mum was in front, and she just said to this woman, have you got any black coffee, please? And she said, no black. Just like that. So I just said, it doesn't matter. I'm not bothered. And I just thought, straight away, I thought, if that was here, if Rainey's mum was pouring, she'd have said, no, but I'll go and get you some. It's not a big thing, is it? And it's not that important to me, but I've always remembered it. And we went and sat down with two cups of coffee and me. And this same chap came to us, chat. And I got the impression he was the church secretary because he was a very busy man. And eventually he said, I'll have to go. And he went, and nobody came near then. And we just got up and went. And I just thought, you know, the church was so busy, they didn't notice any newcomers. And it's sad that, because I still see this church, I still go near this church on a day out. And I look at it, sadly, that was probably over 30 years ago, and I'm bearing a grudge here, and I shouldn't. I do pray for forgiveness for my sins. But it sticks with you, doesn't it? And I just think, the other week, David read out that poem about why people don't come to church. And he said at the end of it, I don't think that applies to this church. And yet, but I don't want it to either. I don't want us to rest on our laurels, which that church seemingly did, and didn't notice there were different people there, didn't make them welcome, because they were all in their own inner circle. I don't want us to become like that. We are a busy church. We're a full church every Sunday. So, some of you may know the story of Abraham, and I'm going to briefly summarize it now for those who may not be familiar. In a nutshell, God promised Abraham a son, even though they were elderly and his wife Sarah was basically past childbearing age. Due to their impatience, nothing happened. And Sarah suggested that Abraham sleeps with the maidservant, Hagar. And that way, maybe a son could be provided. Typical bloke, Abraham did not decline, did he? And she had a baby. And they called the baby Ishmael. Then animosity and jealousy grew between Hagar and Sarah. Eventually, Hagar conceived. She had a son whom they called Isaac. Historically, the Jewish nation grew through Isaac's descendants, but Ishmael's descendants are considered to be the Arab nation. So even today, there is still conflict between the Jewish nation and the Arab nation. This is why we have this crisis, or one of the reasons why we have a crisis in the Middle East. What happened thousands of years ago is still having an impact in the 21st century. Last time, when I played in the other band, I asked if we could sing Be Still and Know, because in that, one of the lines is, the Middle East will find its peace through Jesus Christ our Son. And that's why I prayed for it earlier. And I would ask that you all, maybe you do, but please continue to pray for these places where there's such conflict going on. All caused because Abraham was impatient with God. Quite a responsibility we therefore have, didn't it? That we, what we do today, or maybe don't do. Sometimes we are being prompted by God to do something and we don't. We go home and think, oh, I wish I'd said something to such and such a buddy. Have you ever thought that this could impact in maybe hundreds or even thousands of years from now? We're not famous. But Abraham wasn't in his day, was he? But what he did has an impact thousands of years later. And that is quite a responsibility for us today, isn't it, if you think about it? It's food for thought, I would say. And going back to the Bible passage, when Ruth tells Naomi about Boaz, Naomi then says he is one of their, it's had it different in this book, guardian redeemers. I don't know if that was what came up there. But it's one of their guardian redeemers. And this term is a legal one given by God in the book of Leviticus. He says, if one of your brothers becomes poor and has to sell any of his land, his nearest relative is to come and buy back what his brother sold. So they had a legal obligation to help out a relative in serious difficulty. Was this another coincidence? Never. I said earlier, I wish I could preach for a couple of weeks on this. There's so much in just four chapters. How long have you got? I can go on all afternoon. Have you got your butties? Has anybody's got a packed lunch that we can share and bless like Jesus did? I won't, obviously. So, just to summarise now, in the next two chapters of Ruth, love blossomed between Boaz and Ruth, and they got married. Can I ask you to go home afterwards and in your own good time to read it, but not read it, but to study it with a Bible app or books or what have you. There's lots of stuff. Even just type into the internet, Ruth, Book of Ruth. There is so much out there. And I just want to encourage you to do it. It's just wonderful. This is God's word, isn't it? So Ruth and Boaz got married, but not before there was another twist in the tale, because there was another relative of Naomi's, and she was closer in relationship to Naomi than Boaz. He was technically the first guardian redeemer. Boaz pointed out his responsibility to this chap, that it's his responsibility to buy the land. So at first he agrees, but then Boaz points out that Ruth comes with it. He's got to marry her. It's like a bog off. However, he doesn't fancy this. He says, I can't do it. It might endanger his estate. Don't know what that means, but he declined. Again, was this part of God's plan? He didn't want that guy to marry Ruth because he wanted Boaz to marry. So, in the presence of the elders, Boaz agrees to buy the land and take Ruth as his wife. It's interesting to note, though, that up until now, God has not been mentioned once. The only time he gets a mention is when they make love. And the Lord enabled her to conceive, it says. So the Lord enabled her to conceive. Ruth had been married for 10 years before this and she didn't conceive. I know that can happen to many couples over millions of years, but again, I do wonder, is this another divine coincidence? He didn't want Ruth to conceive because he wanted her to have a baby through Boaz. I've already said Boaz was a man of honour, and he knew his legal responsibilities. He saw through the fact that Ruth was from Moab and all the years of hate and whatever was completely forgotten about. He ignored the prejudice that had grown up towards the Moabites. The word suggests prejudge others. How many times have we allowed ourselves to prejudge others? We may not consider ourselves to be prejudiced, but at times we may intentionally be that, unintentionally. It can come in many ways. I'll try and very quickly summarise a story that I heard a few years ago now. It was a TV evangelist, and he was saying about somebody came to church, and I think it was one of the deacons or elders, went to this guy afterwards because he didn't approve of how this guy was dressed. He hadn't come. It must have been a suit and tie job, church, twin set and pearls. This guy didn't come like that. I can't remember the details. I think he was in motorbike leathers. So the guy went to him and says, I want you to go home and ask God how you should come to church next time. Okay. So he goes home. Next week he comes exactly the same. And this guy goes over to him and he says, I thought I told you to ask God how you should dress when you come to this church. So the young man replies, he says, I did. But God says, I don't know, because I've never been there either. This person has seen the prejudice in him by the way he was dressed. Boaz, thankfully, didn't go down that route. See, Boaz was the son of Rahab, whom we read in the book of Joshua, helped the Israelites again when they came out of the desert into Jericho, and she hid some of the spies. But Rahab was also known as a prostitute. Maybe he'd grown up, Boaz, facing prejudice because he was the son of a prostitute. We don't know. The Bible doesn't give us that. But he was making sure this didn't happen to others. Some of you will know I love history. I read all sorts of stuff just to gain more knowledge of the past. I love looking at the family trees of the kings and queens throughout history. How they're connected and, you know, and why that person became king when they weren't really entitled to be the king. A few years ago, there was a famous actor, wasn't there, who traced his family tree back to the kings of England, back to Edward III, who ruled in the 1300s. So if you go back to Edward III, you can technically go right back to the Battle of Hastings and William the Conqueror. So a few years ago, I decided to do the same. Ancestry.com is always advertised, and I got a month free subscription. So I did it. It was really interesting. Being called Galligan, I'm obviously of Irish descent and was told when I was young that the family originated from County Cork. In that short month, I didn't have time to establish much, but I really enjoyed it. I mentioned earlier the commentary that I've read says the Israelite law did not allow any descendant of Moab to join Israel down to the 10th generation. If they could not join the community, how could one of them serve as a king? The final verses of the book of Ruth ends with a 10 generation genealogy and says, "This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Abinadab. Abinadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz. Boaz, the father of Obed. Obed, the father of Jesse. Jesse, the father of David." As we know, Jesus was descended from David. So obviously, descended from Boaz. Again, God bringing all these things into play so that thousands of years later, Jesus is born, the son of all these people, the descendants of all these people. It appears that this book was written to defend David's right to rule as king. Because a Moabite, somebody from a Moabite, is not allowed to rule, not be part of the community. If they cannot be a part of the community, how can they have the right to rule as king? But this is showing that genuine faith was present in a woman from a nation whose descendants were normally excluded for 10 generations. If Boaz had not done what he did, who knows what might have happened? Or not happened. We don't know much about Boaz, but there he is in the family tree of Jesus. This book shows how God's purposes are accomplished in the world. He can and will use anyone, whatever the background or standing in the community. That includes us. Quite a responsibility, I said before. It's about seeing through the prejudice and God's provision for the needy. And it's still relevant today for you and I. Amen.